Good morning. Welcome to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldine, and this week we're going to talk about healthcare, novel idea. And before we do, Kate Brister is back from traveling abroad. If you have a question for the Master Gardener on duty, call Kate at 325-0010. Glad to have her back. My guest today is Dr. Paul Gorman. He is an internist. He started his practice actually in Astoria in 1984. He is currently on the teaching faculty at OHSU and Providence, I don't know. And he also works in the evenings at the Wallace Clinic. And good morning.
Good morning.
So, okay, so let's talk about what's up. I know yesterday some major things have happened that may change things, but I don't think we're going to see anything right away.
Well, I'm not familiar with all the details of the current bill, but certainly the problems we've been facing in the last couple of decades, and really worse in the last decade in terms of access to care and the cost of care. I guess the best we can say is the last year has gotten everyone's attention, which I think is great, because I think the more people understand this problem and the problems around it, the better off we are.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so I guess we should first tell me what you do. So you're not actually in private practice, but you see tons of patients.
No, that's right. I don't have a private practice of my own. I used to long ago, but right now what I do is I teach. Mm-hmm. So I'm on the teaching faculty at Providence Medical Center, where I help out teaching the residents in the outpatient clinic. And I'm also on the faculty at Oregon Health Science University, where I spend most of my time.
Mm-hmm.
And there I work with residents and students, mainly in the hospital. So I see patients with residents in the clinic, and I see patients with residents in the hospital, and I also see patients on my own in the Wallace Concern Clinic. And in all of those places, I actually end up encountering a lot of people who, because they haven't had access to good quality care, have, you know, suffered the consequences.
Okay, so what kind of consequences?
Oh, gosh, where do you start? That's such a huge answer. I guess the main one is health.
Their health is worse.
Their health is way worse, and their access to care is way worse. And even when they get care, they're worse off. So we have big studies, for example, with trauma patients and with children, where even once they get to the hospital and get care, people who started out with no insurance have worse outcomes, higher death rates, longer hospitalizations, more complications, those kinds of things. And so even though people eventually, if you get sick enough, you can get into the system and get cared for, people have worse outcomes because they didn't have access in the first place. A typical story, I saw a fellow last year who developed a high fever and chills and sweats and knew he was very sick, didn't have any insurance, didn't have a doctor, had no way to see one. So he went to his girlfriend's house and stayed with her for a few days and just got worse and worse. By the time he came to the hospital, this is about 4 days into a really severe illness, basically as soon as I saw him on the hospital ward, we sent him up to the ICU. He was not coherent. And so when he finally came back down from the ICU and we took care of his problem, which required about 4 weeks of hospitalization, he was able to tell me the story. But it's not hard to imagine that had he been able to see a doctor the first day and get some antibiotics, the whole thing wouldn't have been necessary.
Oh, right. He probably wouldn't have been in the hospital ever.
Yeah, exactly. Because he was otherwise a middle-aged, healthy guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's, then that's not an unusual story. I guess the thing that I'm not sure most people realize or recognize is that this is not a problem that's harming some exotic, excluded population somewhere. This, most of the people I see in these things are just typical you and me.
Mm-hmm.
Person loses their job. A few months later, their insurance runs out. Then their medications run out. And a few months later, they show up in one of the places where I work with their diabetes out of control or their blood pressure out of control or what, all their health problems are worse because they have no way of getting care.
And what about the issue of prevention?
Yeah, so prevention is similarly, just getting early intervention would help a lot for people that have serious health problems. And then, of course, there's really not any option for preventive care for people with no insurance. And I think the other thing that's not well understood is even people with insurance don't get the care that they need because copays and deductibles pretty much make it impossible for them to get that care. I think for the wealthy, we doctors, we have pretty good income, so if there's a $10 copay on something, that doesn't really stop me from getting it.
Mm-hmm.
There are plenty of people in our society who $10 does stop them
mm-hmm.
from getting preventive care for their children. Dental care is a huge problem, and good dental care for children in our country would go a long way. Very important, but there's no way for people with no insurance or limited insurance to get it.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Of course, when I think of prevention, I think of, the best way not to get old is to take care of yourself.
Well,
It's at the before there's a disease.
Right, and when you compare our country to other countries where everyone has coverage, it's a very consistent finding that people in other countries have better access to preventive services. They're more likely to get mammograms. They're more likely to get their pap smears. They're more likely to get all those services that you need to have a doctor or some clinician to be able to provide.
Mm-hmm.
In our country, 45 or 50 million people don't have any clinician, and probably an equal number can't afford, because of copays and deductibles and so forth, they're uninsured, to go in for those preventive services that could help avoid problems down the line.
Mm-hmm. So how do you foresee that we could do a better job in the big picture?
Well, I think, to be honest, I think one of our biggest problems is that we're viewing healthcare as a commodity, as if it were, an automobile, something you buy in a retail market, instead of viewing healthcare as a public good, like education or roads or fire or police protection. We don't think twice if the, if your neighbor down the street or across town has a fire. We all agree that it's a good thing to have mm-hmm. a fire department to go put that fire out.
No matter whose house it is.
No matter whose house it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. We don't call. We don't have them call first and give their insurance company number or confirm that they have, a prepayment like they would have to if they needed health care.
Mm-hmm.
I think the same goes for police protection, for schools. You can argue about whether we're doing all we could in schools, but one of the things we do is we make sure that every child in the country has some access to an education.
Mm-hmm.
And so roads are another example. We don't provide the sort of on as-needed commodity basis roads. We think roads are a public good.
Mm-hmm.
Schools are a public good. The Internet is a public good. And so we all pool our resources. We all chip in to make sure everyone has access to those things when they need them. Now, I don't choose to have a fire in my house, but if I have one, I'm glad there's a fire department there. And I think that's the way we need to be looking at healthcare. It's a public good that serves everyone
mm-hmm.
that none of us on our own can afford. I couldn't afford my own fire department, so I need to chip in with all my neighbors. And I think that's the way we need to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, people like to use rhetoric, government-controlled, that sounds evil. But in fact, I think the examples I've just given are examples where we set public policy to make sure that this public good is achieved and delivered. From a medical perspective, anyone that's in a medical field like yourself knows that the first step in getting the population a little healthier, one of the first steps, is to make sure everyone has access to care, especially preventive care.
Absolutely. And things definitely go wrong for my patients when they wait until they crawl into the office.
Right.
You go,
exactly.
Well, and I've certainly seen plenty of people who are not taking their medication because they can't afford it anymore because they've lost health insurance, and they're certainly much sicker.
That's absolutely right. In fact, a recent study published in one of our diabetes journals showed that for diabetics who have insulin, they're skipping doses, and the number one reason why diabetics skip doses is because they socioeconomic factors. They can't afford all those, and insulin isn't that expensive, but taking your insulin, using the supplies, mm-hmm. checking your sugar, those things are all very expensive in our current health system,
mm-hmm.
and people with conditions like diabetes go without meds. In fact, I've seen more than one patient in the free clinic and other settings I'll tell you one, a 20-year-old fellow whose father lost his job, so he couldn't afford to stay in school, so he had to leave school, so he lost his insurance. He's a type 1 diabetic, which means he cannot live without insulin. But he has no money. So he comes to the office and wants me to prescribe. He's already looked up on the internet to find the most affordable form of insulin that there is. And he's simply asking me to prescribe this. He can't check his blood sugar, can't afford to check his blood sugar. So he's basically, you know, practicing. He's taking care of his diabetes with 1970 technology. And it's a shame that, you know, a healthy, otherwise healthy young adult with a chronic disease has to go without treatment simply because he has no access.
Well, that sure makes the point that we're doing something seriously wrong as a civilization.
Well, precisely. And I think that's, some people talk about socialized healthcare. I'd like to say, as Margaret Flower says, we're talking about civilized healthcare. We're talking about joining civilizations of the world that understand that making sure everyone can get healthcare when they need it is a public good.
You know, imagine this. I had a student from Europe who was enrolled in school here for part of the year, and she needed some care, and she came, and we billed her whatever. I don't know if it was the state or whatever, from whatever country she was from, and got paid in euros. And I can't imagine that if, you know, if my daughter were, you know, in Switzerland or whatever, France, for and needed health care, and, you know, they billed Blue Cross or ODS, that they'd, like, no, sorry. We are not going to pay. I mean, I can't imagine that they'd pay it. And here, you know, without a question, they took care of this right. High schooler's right. healthcare needs halfway around the world.
And you hear the opposite story, actually, about people from the U.S. who travel to other countries. A woman we met with last summer who went to Japan, and while she was in Japan, suffered an ACL tear in her knee and got terrific medical care there, and then actually was advised to stay in Japan for the physical therapy because she wouldn't be able to get or afford the physical therapy she'd need back in the U.S. So she literally got terrific care in another country. And you hear stories from people about that. They get sick in the United Kingdom and they get taken to the hospital, and it's not a big fancy palace with, you know, crystal chandeliers and carpeting, but they get terrific care.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody gets denied care because they don't have insurance.
Right. Well, they also don't get a bill.
Well, and imagine that. In fact, that's a good point, because in our country right now, we are spending an enormous amount of money, $350 or $400 billion, on billing, just filling out forms and sending them to insurance companies and filling them out again. Now, regardless of any of the politics involved, for me as a physician, I see that $350 or $400 billion, that could be spent on something useful. We could vaccinate children. We could make sure every woman that needs one has a pap smear and a mammogram. There's all kinds of good things we could do with that $350 or $400 billion that we are now just wasting on paperwork.
Oh, hear, hear. That's all my office manager does. Yeah.
You think about it. Imagine how many more people are there in the office staff today than 30 years ago.
Oh, well, 30 years ago, we were just starting our practice, and it was just Barry and me.
Yeah.
We didn't have anybody.
And the average doctor's office used to have a pretty small office staff because
right.
we weren't burdened with all this insurance company paperwork. But now, most doctor's offices have far more office staff doing the billing processing than they do actually doing the patient care.
Right. I think in the Coastal Family Clinic, they have one biller per provider.
That sounds about right.
And that seems insane.
Right. And just across the border in Canada, they don't have any of that because they don't have to... they don't have to do all this. So for me, not from a political perspective, but simply from a medical perspective, we have all these people who could be doing something useful for patients.
Oh, man, I'd love it if my my office manager could do something productive.
Imagine if though they could be diabetes educators, community health workers, patient coaches to coach folks through their health issues like exercise and diet,
right.
all kinds of important things that we need to do
mm-hmm.
to solve the problems in this country like obesity. And
rather than trying to get the doctor paid.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, it's lunacy.
Exactly.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call here at 503-325-0010. You're listening to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldine, and I'm with Dr. Paul Gorman. He is on the teaching faculty at OHSU in Portland and at the Providence Medical Center. So we were talking about all the staff of that in every office we know, who spend all their time doing insurance billing. And you know, one of the things that we've been talking about a lot lately in our world is, God, wouldn't it be great if everybody had Medicare? And some of my Medicare patients look at me and they think I'm crazy. You know, why would you want Medicare? I said, because there's no hassle. You get what you need. And of course, what they're thinking about is, well, I can't necessarily get a doctor because they don't want to take Medicare. But if that was the only thing, the doctors would take it.
I think you've hit on an important point, and that is that when we talk about Medicare for everybody, I like to say Medicare Part E, everyone were covered, one of the most important things that would happen is that we'd all share the expense,
right.
And that putting everybody in the same risk pool brings everybody's costs down. The second thing is that Medicare is actually much more efficient. I know people don't believe this because there's this widespread idea that government never does anything right, but Medicare is far more efficient than insurance companies. Now, for physicians, they view Medicare's payments as too low for them, and so a lot of physicians limit the number of Medicare patients that they see, and that's a serious problem. What I think isn't recognized is that our current system, if we only had one system, most physicians would save far more in billing expenses.
Well, you know, that is where I've come with Medicare. I mean, I went through some problems for a couple of years where I couldn't get paid by Medicare. I couldn't get it to work. Once I got the system working and the electronic, I get paid faster and I have fewer problems than with any of my other insurance. I may make less, but I may not make less than with other, you know, other insurances.
And I think another thing that's not well understood, patients, it's sort of interesting, but when people, the sicker people get, the more they migrate to Medicare. Now, that's partly because insurance companies don't want them, so there's adverse selection and there's rescission and all these terrible things insurance companies do, mm-hmm. getting rid of the people that need the care the most.
Right.
But besides that, with an insurance policy, you're often limited in terms of the doctors or hospitals that you can see or the services that you can get.
Mm-hmm.
So patients with a particular insurance plan can only see doctors within the plan.
Right.
And when patients go to Medicare, Medicare doesn't restrict what doctor or hospital you can see.
And I can't understand why people don't think that is the coolest thing. They have choice. They have complete choice.
Right. And so right now people have choice of insurance company, but I think most people, when I talk to them, are interested actually in choosing who's the clinician they're going to see. And what hospital do they go to?
Right. Well, most people don't get to pick their insurance. I mean, they have the insurance that their company buys.
Right.
I mean, but in Astoria, we have a lot of people who have retired here, and they're in between. They're not eligible for Medicare. They're picking up a COBRA, or the COBRA's lapsed, and now they're in the free market, and they're being completely fleeced.
Well, in fact, a former Astoria physician who's just recently retired worked for one of our big health systems here in Portland for years and actually was not able to get coverage. He's in that in-between age,
mm-hmm.
62 and 65 or
right.
so. And could not get covered by an insurance plan, even though he's a, you know, relatively healthy, you know, no big problems guy. But this issue of not being able to get covered, I think, is huge. And again, I think the idea of Medicare for all isn't so much, there wouldn't be those kinds of restrictions if there was just one system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what people don't understand is that with current health insurance plans, they're limited in who they can see and where they can go. Whereas under a Medicare-like system, you see whoever's, you know, everyone. There's
right.
no limitation.
Well, and you know, one of the things that I see as really good about Medicare is when you go to your doctor and you have Medicare and you need to see a cardiologist, you see a cardiologist and there's no question. If you need to see an endocrinologist, you see them, or dermatologist. Whereas in your private plan, they do everything to prevent you from going to that next step.
You know, we just saw somebody in one of our clinics, a young woman who needed gynecologic care. And because of the plan that she belonged to, she had to come to our primary care clinic so that we could fill out the forms to send her to a gynecologist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she didn't actually need any care from us. She needed care from a specialist.
Right. So,
and our only role was to fill out forms and just waste her time and our time doing some processing that really had no purpose. In a system where there's just one payer, take Taiwan, for example, there aren't those kinds of restrictions. People can see the doctor or clinician they need to see
mm-hmm.
without going through paperwork and jumping through hoops.
And Taiwan is a good, that's a great example. Their expense for administration is something like 2%?
Yes, yes, 2%. Imagine the money we would save. And in fact, if you think about all these other solutions, the part of the problem we have with solving our access problem is with our current insurance-based system, there's no way to take care of everybody without spending a lot more money. But the money we're spending just wasted on this administrative stuff would actually pay for the care of most of the people who have no insurance now.
You know, one of the things people don't realize is that insurance companies don't provide health care, and insurance administrators don't provide health care. All that money that goes doesn't do anything for us in terms of making us healthier or providing anything.
Right. There's really no value added.
It's no.
Just taking some money out of the pool. So I think from a clinician's perspective, you know, we'd like to see everyone who needs health care able to get it.
But everybody needs to have access.
If I'm
having a heart attack, I don't want to say, oh, I'll just stay home and die because I can't afford what a bill would do to my family.
And actually, I'll tell you, I had a patient who came to the clinic with what's called acute coronary syndrome. She was having chest pain. She knew what it was because she'd had previous coronary procedures done. Diabetic, high lipids, blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And she refused to be hospitalized. She broke down in tears and said the last time she was hospitalized, because she got put in collections by the hospital, she almost lost her house and her husband.
Whoa.
And she just wouldn't let that happen again. So that's another kind of compelling example. She was a 63, I think, and in between years,
right.
And couldn't get and couldn't afford very definitely needed services. But I think everyone has to have health care. That's number one. But also, I think people need choice. They need to be able to choose who the clinician is that they're going to see, what hospital they go to. And another thing that I think is really missing, and I think it would help our national discussion if we had more transparency. Right now, the decisions about what's covered and what's not covered, what will be paid and what will not be paid, are all behind closed doors. And I think as we try to figure out how to use our public resources and national resources to improve the health of the population, we need more accountability, more transparency in those decisions. What are we spending the money on? Are we going to spend it on obesity, which is a growing national problem? Are we going to spend it on prevention? Those things aren't made in an open, transparent, and accountable way. They're made in the back rooms and the boardrooms.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Well, I think really as long as we have insurance companies for profit, I think they're going to be in the middle collecting money and making access an issue in all kinds of ways.
Well, now, there are countries that have an insurance system.
Mm-hmm.
Switzerland's a good example. Switzerland, unfortunately, is also the second most expensive healthcare in the world. But they have an insurance system, but the insurance companies don't compete by excluding the sick and trying to insure the well. In fact, I'm told that they compete based on how fast they pay claims, if you can imagine that.
Oh, God. That's a different way of going about it.
So I'm not sure what role an insurance industry has. There's an old saying, just because you're not for profit doesn't mean you're against it. And I think that's one of the problems we have now, is that we're stuck with a system that requires a lot of paperwork and requires the substantial overhead that the insurance industry is spending on paperwork and administrative expense, which could instead be spent on health care.
I agree, absolutely. And, you know, Oregon has this prioritized list for conditions, and number 37 is obesity.
Uh-huh.
And yet, very little is being done on any level dealing with obesity, which would be, you know, education and diet work. And you know, yeah, if you can pay money to go to a diet program, you know, obviously you can be in it. But what about children, you know, and people who don't have money to do that? There's no education class to go and learn how to eat properly.
And I think that's another shortcoming of our current system. We take education as an example. In a school system, we have school boards, and we can set public policy to decide what are the things that need to be taught.
Mm-hmm.
In our healthcare system, we don't have any input like that. And so we don't have the ability, because we don't have one system, to say, Lygy, obesity is the biggest problem right now, or it's a growing problem. What are we going to do across our health system to try and improve on that? We have no way of doing that because healthcare isn't organized in any kind of comprehensive way.
That's right. When I bill for obesity services where I've sit down and done education, if I bill a code that would be appropriate for that, never paid. I can get paid for an office visit, but not for actually naming it what I'm doing, which is, there's a flaw. We agree that people need to deal with this, that people need to improve their, their fat levels, and yet there's a block to getting, you know, for people to get that care.
Right, and I think that there's a lot of places where physicians are simply salaried, and I think when you have, there's a couple things you can achieve if you have global budgeting. Then you can get some kind of rational public discourse about how the healthcare dollars are going to be spent. Do we need more MRI scanners, or do we need more community health clinics? How's that money going to be spent? And right now we have no way of having any input on those things to make sure that the resources are being used in ways that improve health the most for the most Americans.
Boy, that certainly, that brings up the whole question of, do we need an MRI in every corner? Do we need an urgent clinic on every corner? Yeah, and we never talk about that.
Right, and I think when you move to a global budgeting arrangement, which they have in some other countries, and I think also, certainly myself, I've almost my entire life been salaried, and so if you move physicians to where they're not constantly trying to figure out how to do all this billing and coding, but can just instead focus on taking care of the patient, I think we could see some real gains in terms of the way healthcare is practiced.
It takes that whole stress out of it. I mean, if the doctor's not so stressed out, they can just relax and sit down with the patient and have a nice conversation.
Right, and unfortunately, right now, there's a lot of disincentives to spending time with the patient. And I think we've organized our healthcare system in a way that produces the disincentive to spending time with the person when that may be what's most needed.
Oh, I would argue that it is exactly what's needed. How can you make a diagnosis in less than 10 minutes? I to come up with the right diagnosis, I think it's unlikely in less than 10 minutes.
So we've organized our system to be an economic commodity. And I think that causes all kinds of problems, including the one we're talking about right now. If we could think about it instead, the VA is actually a pretty good example. VA has much more efficient and much higher quality care than any other organization in the country. I know, again, people, there's this myth that the government can't do anything right, but in fact, the VA is a real shining example of how a large single system can improve its quality and control its costs. And if the rest of the country could follow the VA's example, it would be a good thing for Americans.
Although people do have trouble with access in the VA, getting to specialists and getting some consistency, at least who live rurally, and the VA center is, 100 miles away.
That's been a problem. That's absolutely right. And I know the VA is right now actually trying to decentralize by opening clinics around in other places.
Right. And we do have a clinic in Rylea, but it's really limited. But it does give people an option that's local.
And right. And so from a geographic perspective, you're absolutely right. You can't use the VA system if you can't get to it. And there's some limitations to who they cover. But for the folks that they cover, they deliver higher quality care. When you look at measures like heart failure care and heart attack care and preventive care, they do a really good job, and they're very efficient at it. And I think there's a lot we could learn from that very large single-payer system.
I think that's great. It would be great to have more conversations like this. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Goldine. It's been a pleasure talking to you again.
Yes.